Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Really, WC.
Obviously, taking the mick out of picking the gun up from the toilet floor and then shooting, but I like how it goes do 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 do, and that. I mean, it's so Bond.
Oh yeah,
you could say that's arguably too Bond on the nose, isn't it?
But yeah,
the way it goes into that and the gun barrel, I think. Yeah, I'm all right with that, John. I don't mind it going into the gun, but like you say, do it this once. I can't even remember whether it's, does
yes, absolutely
doesn't have anything.
But end of a film.
Has it at the end?
Yeah, ridiculous. And then Skyfall unnecessarily has it at the end again. So it's like Spectre, finally, we've got a normal gun barrel at the start. But yeah, we...
But then it has the dead.
Oh, for goodness
alive,
sake.
And then, yeah.
Yeah.
Get lost. Yeah, so Daniel Kleiman, he, of course, is the director of the pre-title sequence. And for some reason, who was it who did the Quantum of Solace one? They swapped him after this. Was it like MH13 or something? Anyway, I don't
Mark
know why,
Forster's why. Personal request.
Ah, right, yeah. Well,
there
bad
is, mate.
Decision. Bad, you know,
horrendous decision.
Daniel Kleiman's superb.
Had he not seen this?
This is for
yeah,
me.
So good.
I mean, GoldenEye is a brilliant one, but this for me is probably up there with anything.
I don't think there's any.
Done.
I don't think there are any better.
No, no.
I don't think there are any better in the whole series.
I absolutely love it. He's
one of the best title sequences. And
yeah,
obviously, it doesn't
it's
rely
incredible.
On clumsily
well,
scaled
yeah.
women. And
there's a lot of blood, though, and killing and stuff.
Yeah,
but I really like it, and the way it links to the theme of the, you know... The,
it's gorgeous,
the
isn't it?
...cards and whatnot.
Apparently
yeah.
he was...
Are you not a fan, John?
I love it. I absolutely love it. I think it's brilliant. I was going to mention on the thing that it's very noticeable that it's the first one without the scantily clad ladies, isn't it?
Yeah.
And understandably, I can get at the time there was a lot of criticism about it, and
wouldn't have fit with the film either, would it?
Yeah, and it wouldn't have fit with the film. You're right, Tom. It's brilliant. It's great. Can't disagree with it.
I think my only slight criticism is just the criticism of the whole. Well, is probably what you're. Obviously, Daniel Craig is front and centre in it, or so it's like this is Bond. You're going to absolutely love him. Honestly, you will.
Please
really love
him.
Or you better love him. Yeah. That would be
got a lot of money.
The blue eyed boy.
Yeah,
exactly. I like
some Diamond
Day. You're fine. Couldn't care less.
Yeah. But yeah. So, but that I think it's outstanding. We're just talking about. We're not talking about the song yet.
Daniel Kleiman said he was inspired actually by the cover of the book, the original book, because it had the playing cards and eight red hearts and things like
nice.
This. And he thought it could represent the love story as well. You know, you've got and the like, lovely touch when the Queen of Hearts becomes Vesper's face, very crisp, very old school.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it'll be timeless, won't it? This pre-title sequence, because we've looked at old ones and thought, there's something. Something's a bit awry there, but this, I'm pretty certain, will be timeless. It's a classic.
The colour palette's phenomenal. Isn't
Gorgeous,
it?
Isn't it?
It really stands out. Yeah.
Well, whole film. Spoiler. Yeah, there's like the different houses obviously are like pierced in the bodies. They've got, we will come onto some, but like it fits with the line, I've seen this diamond cut through harder men, and the diamond comes into the game. It's quite crazy. Yeah, they've got men breaking into pieces when they're attacked, and that's quite crisp. The Seven of Hearts becomes 007, babyishly.
Yeah.
I don't like that. There's only one, there's like a bit where it's like, it becomes like a computer typing
James Bond. Status confirmed.
Yeah. That's a bit, probably didn't need that bit. But well, it wasn't. This is the first one of all of them, wasn't it? That it ends on focusing on Craig's baby blue eyes.
Yeah.
A new genre trope.
Well, only because the previous Bonds didn't have those, I think, they cast him, they went, have you seen his eyes? We've got to, when you're thinking of from a visual standpoint and how you're going to mount the hero, it's like, right, he's got these piercing blue eyes. Yeah. We've got to utilise that as much as we can. Yeah, I agree with everything you guys have said. I think the title sequence is just so well executed, and it's just...
Yeah.
Palette is great, the way that they use the cards, even though we won't get there for another hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah, that's pretty admirable.
Yeah, it's just really well executed, and yeah, I think I assume we're going to come on to the song, but the song really helps as well. I think it's a perfect melding of the song with the
absolutely. Class. You can talk about the song and it's fine. Just a few things to say before we open the discussion. Yeah. It's actually the last time the composer, David Arnold, or any composer on the series, co-wrote the song. He had any involvement in the song. And we've said this a few times, we do like it when, because of the composer's written the song, you can use that theme throughout the film and modify the theme, the theme, used more romantically. This is like a proper guitar-led song. It's so versatile. It's also the first time since Octopussy that the title hasn't been the title of the film.
Yeah.
First male performer since The Living Daylights. Yeah.
I thought that,
Again, a bit like when they were deciding who was going to be Bond, when they were deciding who should sing here. From the sublime to the ridiculous, apparently, those who were up for it, from Tina Turner, babyishly again, to Tony Christie. Any serious elements.
Is this the way to the casino?
Just because Peter Kay was at his peak at the time doesn't mean.
Oh, that's horrendous.
I think that was more.
Imagine
Tony
that.
Christie put himself forward. I don't think the producer was like, hey, that Tony's a good, he'd be a good fit.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's how it works, I'm throwing my hat in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It wasn't on the soundtrack, which was the first time it wasn't on. Because apparently this one was because Chris Cornell, because he recorded it as part of his album at the time.
Yeah.
He wanted it to be on the album rather than on just for the film, to be fair.
The single is mixed.
Yeah, it's a different one, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
How is it?
Yeah, it's not as orchestral. Chris Cornell single version. It's quite clearly the same song, but the mix is different on it. More distorted guitars.
Yeah, the verses are better in the film, I think. Yeah.
That's my observation of the song. Firstly, I will say that I absolutely love it. It's in my top five. It's in my top five Bond songs. But what I will say is that I think this is predominantly a Chris Cornell song.
Yeah.
As opposed to a co-write. I would say that whilst it's credited like that, it does not surprise me that Chris Cornell put it on an album and took off the strings and put it more guitar heavy, because the only bit of David Arnold I hear in it is the strings, to be honest. I would say that I could hear this song on a Chris Cornell album and not think, oh, that's a Bond song, if it was his own thing.
Yeah.
But David Arnold makes it very much like that. The strength of this song for me are the lyrics. The lyrics are obviously about the actual Daniel Craig, sorry, the James Bond talking, and from the perspective of an assassin. And I think when you're going down the whole route of becoming Bond or Bond Begins, whatever you want to call it, I think it really works well. It's brilliant, super.
Yeah, it's just so abrasive and confrontational.
It really
is. Like, and it's
excellent
word. Yeah, I just really love that song. I quite like Chris Cornell, not as much as Michael Mann, obviously. But
Oh, imagine a Michael Mann Bond film.
He likes this movie. As soon as he heard that song come on, he's like, oh yeah, that's ace. Just put two Chris Cornell needle drops in my last movie.
He's got a great voice, though. It's a cracking voice.
It's great, yeah.
And I think he said it. It is like he wanted it to be a bit more like Live and Let Die, a bit more up tempo, because I mean, all of them now, they're just sort of like warbling, aren't they? And you know, Sam Smith and Adele and Billie Eilish. I mean, there's no oomph to them, are there? You know, no offence. Yeah. I know you like Skyfall Jump, but you know what I mean.
In terms of production, I totally get it.
I think that's a fair point. Like, when I hear a Bond song now, I'll generally go, that's absolutely fine. That'll look really nice over the opening sequences. And then if that comes on the radio, or if I happen to have it on my phone, I'll probably skip it.
Yeah.
But that Chris Cornell tune comes on. I'm listening to that all the way through, and I've been bumping it all week. Like, it's really good.
Is it seen? Generally, is it popular? Is it? I was aware of some sort of some people don't quite like it. I love it.
I think it's quite divisive. I know Chris isn't a fan of it, famously. You know,
we'll have to
learn why at some point. He'll probably be screaming now, saying, "No, I love it! I love it!" I think he did say he wasn't a fan.
I have quite a few friends who like casual Bond fans, and this is by far and away their favourite song
Bond. Amazing.
Ian Astley thinks that this is by far the best song in the whole of the Bond series. He's like, this is but it fits the genre that we like as well. You know, it's very guitar laden music. So, but yeah.
Sorry to go back to the actual talk of there being a credit sequence. It's interesting that they decided to keep a credit sequence, isn't it? If they were doing away with lots of things.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
A credit sequence seems like a thing that they wouldn't have put in.
I think
credit's due, they did see the value of it. Yeah.
I mean, it's quintessential Bond, though, isn't it? You've got to have the opening credit sequence. I think I have always bemoaned the fact that so many movies don't have opening credit sequences.
Yeah.
Now, they just start, and then you're supposed to sit through the credit sequence at the end. Like, I like to be introduced into the world of the film.
Yes.
Bond has always done that so magnificently that I wish more films would do that, to be honest. Not in the same way, obviously, but you know, I like to know who shot the movie as I go in case I haven't looked it up on IMDb before I sit down to watch it.
Yeah,
you don't want to be on your phone in the film, do you? Like, oh, hang on. Exactly, I'd quite like to know who did this bit. Yeah, I agree. Can you remember when it first came out? It was, back in those days, it wasn't like, oh, it'll just appear on YouTube and it'll all be shared on Twitter or whatever. It was like, you know, radio premiere, and it was like a big event. Yeah. I can't remember. I think I listened to it in the car because that was like the only radio, obviously, I had at the time. And it was, again, like, how good is this? Of course, that's the...
Yeah.
I don't think this version of it's available, the orchestral, as you say. I don't think you can get it. It's only the sort of the album version and then the film version with the rock song on the single. So there's like three versions of it, apparently. Chris Cornell, quality guy. I mean, I love his album with Timbaland, but again, that's another bit like Dying of the Day, absolutely slated. But it's not very genre. It's not very Chris Cornell. It's going a different genre, but I'm an absolute sucker for mixing genres, so mixing R&B with rock, to me, is brilliant. But anyway...
Did you like that Justin Timberlake country album then?
Well, some of it. Yeah. I like them all. Well, I love country, but I prefer the R&B ones on the album. But anyway, yes, I know what you mean. The guy who did the video, has anyone seen the actual video to it? Not the title sequence. I can't really remember it.
Long time.
No, I don't think I've seen it. Or can't remember.
The guy directed it, Michael Houseman, apparently. He did two of my favourite Madonna videos, You'll See and Take a Bow, which again... absolutely massive in the 90s, but no one mentions ever again. Madonna's biggest hit in America. Absolutely nothing.
I can't even recall that song. No,
it's Babyface co-wrote it. It's R&B. So
I know exactly what you're talking about.
I'll whack it on in the background. We're playing now in the background. Good video. The video is actually at a bullfight. Anyway, he also did Hazard by Richard Marx, Jesus Walks by Kanye, and Sexy Back by Justin. Oh. So good CV.
No, I was just going to say my thoughts on the song. I think I absolutely love it. I think it's brilliant, and I really like the fact that it's like fast paced. Yeah, lyrics are brilliant. The way it works with the title sequence, and also I can see what you're saying about it being more of a Chris Cornell song, but at least it does mean that we get a lot of the theme during the film, which I just absolutely love.
True.
And the music's really good to this film. And I think it was, you know, quite... they obviously... I don't want to discuss the song Die Another Day right now, because, you know, that'll take forever, but... I think they've made this mistake to a lesser extent since, but, like, they got such a big star to do it that they couldn't be like, right, you're going to be writing with David Arnold. You know, you can't say that to Madonna.
Mm.
And then, so in Madonna, you've got to give her free rein, really, and then that's what happens. So, they kind of strip that back a bit, and Chris Cornell is a far, particularly in the UK, a far smaller name than Madonna. And I think the whole thing works better.
Weirdly, even though you are right, he's obviously much bigger because of Audioslave, Soundgarden, much bigger in America than here. The song was like, apparently it was number 79 in America, but it was pretty big in Europe, really big in Europe. It was number 7 here. So, quite not bad actually, considering people, if it was released as Soundgarden or Audioslave, it might have been more famous. But, I mean, we didn't really know Chris Cornell as a solo artist then, so it's quite a big hit across Europe.
Yeah, I know you mentioned how, you know, there were children playing in the aisles for the second half of the film, but I can only think, if this song came out when we were children, you'd be having play fights and all sorts to it. It's so, like, there's such a good pace to it. You'd be singing it on the playground and thinking that you were James Bond and you're an action hero, especially after seeing this pre-title sequence. I think it celebrates everything that's good about Bond, and it's like an action song, isn't it, that's so exciting to listen to. It's perfect.
It's quite different from other Bond songs as well, isn't it? It's not really got a repetitive tagline that you can sing along, like, you know. So, you know, it's not going, oh, the living daylight. It's not got anything like that about it. But yeah, it's just so fantastic in its own way. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, You Know My Name is like just at the end of the chorus. It's got the whole build up and all the, you know, kill you. That's probably the most Bond chord bit of it, isn't it? Sorry, this is really sad.
No, it's brilliant.
But it does sound very Bond.
Oh,
my version of it just then. No.
Hi, I'm Rob.
I'm Simon.
And I'm James.
We want to talk about those movies. Those supposedly bad movies. Those movies that bombed.
To see if they weren't that bad after all, join us every other Tuesday on the For Your Reconsideration podcast, part of the Pod Dojo podcast network.
You can catch us on iTunes, Spotify, and all your usual podcast apps.
And it won't cost you a solitary bean, mate.
It's like it's free.
It's just like it's free.
So here we are then, the first scene of the actual post-credits world of Casino Royale. And we're in Mbale, Uganda, or should I say, Black Park in Buckinghamshire.
Really?
Can you believe that? It was filmed in England. I thought maybe it might be filmed in Spain or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. It's so, there's so much humidity.
Nice and...
Yes. Do, 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 do.
No, I'm going to continue to be very positive. I really like this scene. I absolutely, I'm a bit gutted I've heard that, because I really like the setting. It's, you know, scenes in rain are always brilliant in films. Maybe apart from Four Weddings and a Funeral, but...
hang on, what?
I'm only joking. Yeah. It's just because I suddenly, you know... Anyway. particularly in action films, I absolutely love scenes in the rain.
Yes.
Tom, you always say that they should shoot more in Africa in Bond films. They just don't seem to go there very much. So anyway, so it's Chris that Uganda's used, even if it was Buckinghamshire. That's a bit of a shame. But yeah, I think it's a great introduction to Lashif, and the contrast between the, you know, what the sort of Ugandan army people look like, and then him in his black suit, the way he gets out of the truck, shot brilliantly.
It's amazing.
I think it's a great introduction.
Some quality music as well for Mickelson's arrival.
Yeah. Threatening and,
Fan of David Arnold, Ariana.
Yeah, well, we might mention it more, but I think David Arnold does an absolutely stellar job with this soundtrack. Really good, and this is the first time you really...
Oh, yeah, the score.
Yeah. And you know, you can hear the influence that it's making. You know, your introduction to a villain. You know, you must be a good composer if you can make a man taking a puff of an inhaler look sinister. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you would know, Harry.
Yeah, well, exactly, yeah. as an asthma sufferer.
For the listeners. So this guy, the guy in the beret, I think he's called Mr. Stephen Obano. This
Obano,
chap.
Yeah.
Yeah. The actor was in Miami Vice. I didn't realise that. So there's
the film.
The series was never shown in England, really. Isn't it? That's
really what was it I'm looking at about him today?
He was also in Black Panther as well.
Yeah, that's what Calvary, I saw him in.
Calvary.
He's a great character, this guy.
I loved Calvary, but I can't picture him in it.
No, I can't either, no. I've only seen it once. Anyway, yeah, he's Isaac Di Bancole, and yeah, so we get an introduction, of course, the boy giving him the money for the machine and all that, because he's obviously fetched him the drink, which is quite crisp and gets you involved in the scene. And the sort of, even like I say, it's not authentic, but it makes it feel authentic. Yeah, so the bit of a complication with this is, like I say, even though they got the rights to the novel, they haven't got the rights to name Spectre. So this sort of references to, you know, my organisation. They would have said Spectre, I think, unless they wanted to, like, reveal it only at the end. But I don't think that harms it at all. I think it's good. It keeps up the mystery.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And even though we criticise Spectre, of course, for retconning it so that Silver was involved in all this all along, I think apart from Silver, it would have been fine to sort of say Blofeld was in charge of all this. Because I'd buy that. I think all this is clearly... And we'll come on to it as it goes along, because we find out that Schieffer isn't the main...
There's definitely a sense that... There's definitely a sense that stuff's filtering up. Yeah. Sorry, I was just saying there's definitely a sense that from this film, stuff is filtering up towards something bigger. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I never think that Le Schieffer is ever portrayed as a number one boss of an organisation. For example, you wouldn't be travelling to Uganda. You know, that's a job that...
Yeah,
well, the middleman likes to travel in quantum.
Well, unfortunately, that's one of the slight criticisms I have of this film. Just that one scene, but anyway, but the still thing, yeah, and I think you get that he's just a banker, he's a financer for these terrorists, which is the same in the novel, apart from it's for Schmersh. It's great. It's brilliant. I love that line about, do you believe in God?
Yeah.
No, I believe in a... What is it he says again?
Reasonable rate of return.
Reasonable rate of interest.
Return.
Yeah.
Rate of interest. Great. Brilliant line. Yeah.
I guess.
And do you guys all rate Mads Mikkelsen in this role?
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant.
He's one of my favourites.
Yeah,
for sure.
He's really good.
He's so good. He's got real presence. He almost doesn't have to say anything and he's sort of oozing what... You know, you can sort of see what he might be thinking, and there's mystery behind him. But I don't know. I think he's superbly cast.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think as well. I like the inhaler as a touch in terms of it's almost a plot device because they need somewhere to put the bug later on, don't they? But it also gives him. It feels like a little bit of a screenwriting trick to humanise him as well. So even though he is the baddie, he is a man as well. And it also, as well, sort of what John was saying there, that you always get the impression that he's not the number one. It gives him a vulnerability as well.
Yeah.
Wouldn't necessarily see in a Bond villain. So I think even though that seems like a little throwaway thing, it makes him a real person. It services the plot later on because he needs to have that inhaler on him for him to put the bug in. And it gives you the sense that he's maybe not as threatening as he may appear, even with the scar and the weeping blood.
And I completely agree. I think Le Schieffer's an excellent villain and Mads Mikkelsen is perfect for it, absolutely perfect. But what I do also like about this scene is that I'm also scared of the other guy, Stephen. What did you say his name was? I think
West Ham defender.
I think you've got a brilliant sort of contrast between villains there, where you've got an aggressive general leader who's physically terrifying, but then you've got Le Schieffer, who is terrifying because he possesses power in different ways. He's kind of perhaps more of he's got brains rather than brawn, and you kind of got these two crooks up against each other, and I didn't know quite who to be more scared of. They're both scary to me, which is great. And within that, you do have this sense that, well, they're not even the number ones, you know, that there's someone above them. So it's building towards something that I think is exciting in terms of, you know, villains and a plot. So I think that's, I was getting excited during this scene, definitely.
Am I right in saying that Mr. White's in this scene
yes,
as well?
Yeah,
yeah, he is.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Because he very much comes across as, oh, how shall I say it? I think he comes across as the instigator in this.
Yeah,
I do feel that. What, I mean, Mr. White is a very interesting character in that there's very few characters that are in three separate Bond films. What's your opinions on him? I personally really like him. I really like Mr. White.
I do like him, but I think in some ways, if I was writing this film and you know, I'll be banging about on about this, so I'm really sorry, but I think he should be the one at the end who the showdown is perhaps with, or the big
fall of a house in Venice.
Yeah, because he's clearly not the top man. He's almost like a middleman, or you know. But yeah, I think it would have, especially as he's the one who later kills Le Chiffre, I would have liked him in Venice to have been the opponent.
Yes.
And then I think that would have given me a greater sense of like more of a completeness in terms of the storytelling and everything. I he's realistic. He looks quite scary somehow. It's, you know, it's an interesting name. I presume a code name. I don't know.
Madeline Swan.
Well, yeah, I we won't come up. We won't talk about that, I don't think. Cause...
Well, all I'll say with that, Math, is he was in, obviously, Quantum of Solace, but apparently there was a scene cut from the film where he is killed in that. So that the only reason he's Inspector that could do that was because that was cut. So, I mean,
well,
again,
right.
So, to be honest, I would have liked, as I say, I would have liked a showdown at the end with him or with the same character as this, and then, you know, Bond maybe does the Bond, James Bond, and either kills him or something.
Yeah, invest.
And then that's it. Then you don't have... You can't then have someone taking that on and then having him in the boot of a car and driving around on the, you know, I can't remember where it is. In
Italy.
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah.
He's got a great face.
Yes, you know, he has. We said, I remember on From Russia With Love, Chris particularly was saying, in those old films, you weren't cast really so much on it. You know how now everyone's good looking, aren't they? And if they need a sort of, not ugly character, but someone with a more distinguished face, it's usually a good-looking guy with a lot of makeup on. But then it was like people, you know, like Kronstein in that, and it's Professor Dent in Doctor No. They're like really interesting faces, and I think, you know, Jesper Christensen, he's in that sort of realm.
Yep.
He was also, has anyone seen The Debt? He was absolutely terrifying in that.
Oh,
that's such an underrated film.
Yeah,
I've not seen that film.
It's directed by the NFL, brilliant NFL coach and quarterback, John Madden. It's really good. It's like a revenge thriller post Second World War.
Helen Mirren. Who else is in it?
Helen Mirren, Jessica Chastain. Incredible.
Oh, I know which one it is.
Kieran Hines.
Bond, Sam Worthington.
Yes,
right down on the
reason
list.
Reason I didn't remember him, yeah. No, I'm joking. No. But Jesper Christensen is the sort of guy who tortured them or whatever, and then he's got away. You know, he's like an old Nazi who's somehow got away and changed his name. And, you know, at the end he's sort of, oh, it's so scary. But anyway, he's pretty scary guy. He was in a couple of Lars von Trier films because he's Danish as well. Melancholia and Nymphomania. Obviously not seen them. Pretty arty. And I have seen Antichrist, which...
was Chaos Reigns!
Yeah, pretty offensive, but... pretty good as well. Anyway, right, we won't talk about that now. Rob and Becky saw it together, and you know, goodness me, I don't think they were expecting that. I'll let him go on about that opening scene. Some of the most horrific images.
He misjudges his audience sometimes, Rob. Doesn't he?
Proper 18, like proper NC-17 stuff. That film in it. And then we mentioned, going back to Mads Mikkelsen, he was a gymnast and an athlete, and then he was a professional dancer for 10 years before he became an actor.
Wow!
Why are some people so just ludicrously talented?
Exactly, exactly.
It's just not fair at all. Like, just be one.
Don't hog it all. Give us some of that. Yeah. Tom, am I right in saying, I think I saw on Twitter somewhere that for some of his Danish films, he's been in quite a lot of comedies. Or did I like?
Yeah,
he's known
I think so.
As
yeah,
being comedic actor. Whereas you know here, babyishly because he's like European and stuff, but because he's so good at taking on these roles, I was quite surprised by that.
I didn't know that. I know. Again, another big Danish name now, director Nicholas Winding Refn. I've not seen his Pusher trilogy. Those were his first films, and apparently that's what Mads Mikkelsen made his name in.
Right.
In those Danish films. I don't know whether Refn did all three, but he might have just done the first one. But Mads Mikkelsen is in all three, and then it was. I mean, King Arthur. He was in. Goodness me, it was better than the recent one. I know you did it on FYR, but I'm not necessarily that's not necessarily the same, which is it. He was in that, but he was not. I mean, he's not really much to do in that. But have you seen The Hunt? Anyone?
Yeah, no, great.
Yeah,
it's in the IMDb top 250, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's a Thomas Vinterberg film. That
yeah, it's excellent.
He's fantastic in that. And that's the thing, like, in Hollywood, he gets drafted in as, like, a villain sidekick or a henchman or what have you. But when he's working in Europe, he's, like, a real sought-after thespian.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He's doing another film with that's coming out, it may come out, with Thomas Vinterberg, where he plays an alcoholic as well, and he's getting raves for that, so he's an incredible actor. And funnily enough, I've actually just started the series Hannibal.
It's so good.
It completely passed me by the first time round. So I'm working my way through that, and he's spectacular.
He's absolutely so good.
He's sensational. Have you ever seen Arctic?
No, I've that's on my list. Yeah, so is it like a survival thriller?
Very low budget survival thriller. I think about $3 million, something like that. It's set in Iceland, just a one man survival mission. He is sensational in that.
Oh, amazing.
The film is slow, but it's worth watching just for how amazing he is in that.
Brilliant.
It's a one-man piece. It's brilliant.
Casino Royale. I'm only joking. Yeah, Rogue One, of course, he was in.
Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange, yeah. Doctor.
Yeah, yeah, fine, I'm not a massive fan of that one.
Can't remember it.
It was it. Okay.
It's a Marvel movie, I've seen.
Yeah, it's a Marvel, you've seen, yeah.
Yeah, is he the villain in that?
He is. Yeah. Good cast again.
Always get good casts.
Yeah. Benedict Wong. but yeah, that what a weird end to the film, like psychedelic, wasn't it? Anyway, goodness me.
Yeah.
Apparently, Le Chiffre is Albanian. I didn't quite. Get, yeah.
Yeah. The first time I'd ever heard that when.
Yeah, I was surprised when I heard that. Yeah.
So they changed that because he's originally French in the book, but they changed
it
for
French
that.
French name, isn't he?
Yeah. I can only guess they changed it to kind of like link it to the fact that he's holding a poker game in Montenegro and it's quite close. I can only guess that that's the reason why they've done it.
Albania is a bit more unstable, isn't it?
Definitely. Yeah.
I don't know whether that was. I saw an interview with him, you know, on the making of this film, and he said his favourite Bond villain growing up was Jaws. He was more a henchman than that, you know, we're not. just because he said, I think The Spy Loved Me was the first film he saw as a kid, so I think he loved him.
Oh,
but his favourite villain, proper villain, Zorin. So couldn't love this guy anymore.
No,
he's like a massive Christopher Walken fan. So he was.
Come on,
A View to a Kill.
If you're enjoying the Really 007 podcast, why not follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter? Effective immediately. We're not a country club, 007.
We're going to be praising this film a lot because the next scene is just fantastic, I think. We go to Madagascar and we have these running stunts. Be careful how you say that. So it's another new location. I think it was probably filmed in the Bahamas maybe when they were there. It'd be difficult to film in Madagascar, to be fair, wouldn't it? It's another great new location. It's got, to be honest, the cinematography. I'm going to be controversial. I actually think the cinematography is better in this film than it is in Roger Deakins' Skyfall.
Yeah, well, I
I'm
think,
so sorry.
I think I don't necessarily agree with that statement, but I know what you mean.
It looks nicer.
Well, yeah. I think
overall,
there are some fantastic shots in Skyfall. Some unbelievable shots that were
greatest
probably
hits.
They're probably more individual shots that are more memorable and beautiful, maybe than this scene. But yeah, I do know what you mean, and I think overall the film looks really rich,
lush.
Yeah, it really does look great.
Yeah, I completely agree. I understand what you mean, Tom. I love Roger Deakins, and I remember Matt saying, and it's something you've heard before, where you can pause it and it get, you know, it's a beautiful thing to look at. But I don't know whether I like it for action films. I don't know whether that's necessarily what I want for action films. This is closer to what I would want for an action film. It's not distracting. I think the black and white thing is distracting in the opening sequence for me, but everything else from now is perfectly tuned in to you focusing on the action and the pace and it being pleasing on the eye and not at all a distraction, but actually really nice to look at the same time. I think for me, this is the balance that I probably want from a James Bond and an action film.
Yeah, every location looks great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wherever they are, it brings the best out of it. You know, so that's why I'm really surprised about, you know, the Uganda, and then, even though it's a short scene, but, you know, when we get to Venice and all those places, it really brings these places to life.
Yeah.
Does anyone know the guy's name?
Yes, it is Phil Mayhew. I think.
Well done with pronouncing.
Yeah, I've got it written down somewhere.
Acute in it.
Yeah.
And an X.
He did GoldenEye, didn't he?
Well. Yeah, he's a Martin Campbell long-time collaborator. He got a BAFTA nomination for this. So, you know.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I think you can tell that, like, he did GoldenEye as well. I think both of those films have a very timeless feel.
Yes.
Both GoldenEye and Casino Royale, they don't look dated in how they've been shot at all.
And what a compliment that is.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, you said For Your Eyes Only, you think, is a bit TV movie.
I think For Your Eyes Only, you can tell it's John Glenn's first film. I think it feels a bit TV in places in how it's shot. I hate to say this, but I think License to Kill looks a bit dated now. I think it's of its time. It's 80s.
Yeah.
And I
John's
love it.
Favourite.
Yeah, it's my absolute favourite, don't get me wrong.
I think that's fair, John.
No, I know, I know what you mean.
But if you told me that Casino Royale is 15 years old...
Yeah, I agree.
It's just the mobile phones that give it away.
It's the mobile phones, that's it. Yeah. Absolutely.
And obviously the cars are from the 60s, so... From now on, aren't they?
And I think as well, just quickly on that point, like, you know, to compliment Phil Mayhew again, there is, 6 years between License to Kill and GoldenEye, and you would not say that by looking at either of those films.
Yeah.
You know, like, GoldenEye looks far more recent than License to Kill does. Yeah.
It's sharp, isn't it? The editor, Stuart Baird.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now, listen to this. Okay, he's pretty old now, but he's done some incredible films edited. Nominated for Superman, Gorillas in the Mist with Michael Apted, and longtime collaborator with Richard Donner. So all the Richard Donner, you know, Lethal Weapon, all those, obviously Superman, said. He returned for Skyfall as well to edit that. But he directed three films in the mid-90s, early 2000s now. Star Trek Nemesis, I've not seen that. US Marshals and Executive Decision. Both of those James are ripe for FYR.
Yeah. Some of the best.
US Marshals, is that...
Wesley Snipes.
I love Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it'd get a pass from me on that basis alone. It's not as good as The Fugitive.
No, but
what is... Yeah.
Well,
and Executive Decision is just the most hilarious thing ever.
It's
because,
brilliant.
Steven Seagal thought he was the lead.
Yeah, it's gonna be on your. It's gotta be on FYR. There's no way, Robble.
Oh, it is such a good film. I love Executive Decision. Yeah.
I remember Seagal's visibly upset, podgy face when Kurt Russell shuts the the hatch of the plane on him.
Because he got joint billing, didn't he?
Yeah.
Because that was contractual or something. And then he assumed that he was going to be like the main character in it or something.
Oh no, you die halfway through. Spoilers free Executive Decision.
I vividly remember, it must have been about 7 or 8 years ago, I was just texting you guys saying, I'm just looking for some action films. What do you recommend? All three of you replied, Executive Decision.
You got Halle Berry. Goodness me.
I bought it straight out.
Yeah.
And me and my brother, me and Richard, sat down that Saturday night and he was just obsessed. I mean, he was just obsessed with David Suchet as a bad guy.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where's the Passenger Manifest?
Quality film.
Kurt Russell in a tux.
Kurt Russell. Yeah. Me.
Who is he? 007?
FYR alumni. Yeah, yeah, he says that, doesn't
he? Kurt Russell, yeah. I mean, who doesn't?
No.
No.
We like to big up these people, but yeah. Just going back to the plot, I forgot to mention something. It's quite complicated again, for, like betting shares on Skyfleet stock.
I did understand it eventually.
I got that. Isn't it?
Yeah.
About
there's that little scene, isn't there, in London? Sort of little, with some guy, some banker guy. Is he? Or...
I mean, it's very, very realistic. It's
yeah.
I mean, it's basically The Big Short, isn't it? No, it is. It's betting against something that's a guarantee and making a heck of a lot of money out of it.
Billions as well, the TV series.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. They invoke 9/11.
They do. At one point,
saying that, you know, when 9/11 happened. Yeah, Billions does. So does Casino Royale. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, M says, you know, when the planes hit the World Trade Center, somebody made a lot of money that following day.
Yeah.
And this is that's basically what Mads Mikkelsen's plan is. I always thought I found it quite funny watching it this time that the plane, the company where this plane prototype is called Skyfleet, is it?
Skyfleet, yeah.
Thinking ahead. Did you say Skyfleet?
Yeah.
Very enjoyable. I thought that far ahead on that stage. This sequence, parkour sequence, which dates it a little bit because parkour was all the rage
in the office.
Everybody loved
parkour. Yeah.
But this is just absolutely top level popcorn.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's so slick. It's so vast as well.
Yeah.
The helicopter shots when they're fighting up on the crane. The stunt work is just incredible. It's so good. Like, it's just such... And it completely holds up because it's 95% practical as well. So it doesn't age. It's always going to look that good. It's always going to be that kinetic. It's always going to be that energetic. And it's just fantastic. And again, I'm just absolutely loving this movie at this point. It's so good.
Hashtag me too.
Yeah, you mentioned the vastness of it. And I completely agree, James, that I love... like the geography of action sequences. I love how this sequence starts. I love where it starts at this, where there's this crowd gathering around is it a cobra versus like a meerkat? And I think there's that great intensity where they're spying on each other, and you know they've got the fingers on ears and stuff like that. It's all very close. But then where it goes from there, you know, the chase takes them through some amazing places, and you know onto vehicles, onto cranes. And like you said, that word, the vastness of it is amazing. And then you also get to the point where you're getting aerial shots of it. It builds and builds brilliantly. And although I agree that maybe parkour is a bit dated, I think it's still amazing to see. It's really amazing to watch. Yeah.
I mean, this is Bond at its finest. This is what Bond does well. You know, Bond should be the trendsetter. So it goes and gets the founder of Free Run to play the villain. And that's what it should do. And I look at this and I think, we are taking something of this era. I mean, you look back over the films and we look at it now and we think that looks naff. But when Roger Moore gets on that jet ski on Spy and Love Me, those portable jet skis weren't heard of at that time. And it was a trend-setting thing. This is the same concept. We are taking something and we are setting it and saying, this is what we are. This film is brilliant at this. It's a superb, superb scene. It reminds me of the video game Crash Bandicoot at times. Like, because it's all platform jumping. It is all platform jumping, and you ain't. If you miss this bit, you're going to fall and die, and you haven't got that mask to help you, like you do on Crash Bandicoot. It's a great, great action scene.
It really is, and I think, you know, big credit goes to Martin Campbell for that, and how it looks, and you feel, you know, the geography of the scene, you know where everyone is and who needs to get where. You know, it's a basic chase if you think about it. It's just one man chasing another, which is really good, and I like the contrasting styles between what's the villain called, actually?
Molaka.
He's like amazing, you know, like you say, John, he's the founder of but he's the guy who did, you know, this. So his style, the smoothness of some of his movements and amazing look, compared to like Bond being, you know, much
rougher.
Yeah,
that works so well.
Yeah, you know, it's brilliant.
Like improvising, basically, just doing what he can to get after him. Yeah, I think it's terrific. I'm not a massive fan of catching the gun and then...
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I loved that. I thought it was amazing.
I think it just, I don't know, it just jars with me a little bit, but yeah, I mean, if James likes it.
No, I just thought it was, I thought it was a nice comedy beat in there, because what I like about this film is that, because I sort of share some of the criticisms that you guys have of the later Daniel Craig ones, but I think they sort of get the balance kind of right in this one between grittiness and fun escapism stuff. So they're fighting up on a crane that's like, what, 50 feet off the ground. He throws a gun at him, he catches it and throws it straight back at him. It's proper Hollywood.
Picture Brosnan doing it as well.
Just well, yeah, yeah,
yeah. The thing, I absolutely love this sequence and I admire it so much and I find it so thrilling. This is the first time you see, and that's what I think Craig does a lot, certainly in this film, where he will not move his face during action. He keeps a straight face and he keeps his mouth closed for everything. There's absolutely no sense of him being exasperated facially, even though he's doing these amazing things. Like, there's a point where he does like a roly-poly and then the camera cuts straight to his face and he's just got his mouth closed, like he's not doing any breathing or anything. He's got a similar kind of, when he's doing action, he's got a similar stare as a raptor. Like, you know, raptor in the Jurassic Park films that have that it's like a dead stare but with the mouth closed. It's quite strange. But I seem to notice it a lot in this version that he doesn't, there's no huffing and puffing. There's certainly no like Pierce Brosnan yelling, there's no like of Roger Moore. When Daniel Craig does action, he doesn't open his mouth or let out any sounds, or there's no exasperation at all, which I think I don't like about Daniel Craig's action performances. But I only mention that because I think it happens quite a lot in this film for me. But this is superb action, absolutely no doubt about it. Incredible action, and I think, like Matt said, the way Bond approaches this is so well written and choreographed that he's working his own way around it. He can't do the parkour like the guy, but he's practical and resourceful, and he's able to. There's a point where he runs through a wall, which I think is a bit daft, but he's able to, bruise his way around, which is good.
It's very much showing that whole blunt instrument.
Oh, yeah, bull in a china shop.
Like that, you know.
I said that I didn't watch this film for ages after all. Didn't watch it much anywhere near as much as I watched the other ones. But I've always remembered the word ellipsis. In fact, in our quiz that we had with other Bond Twitter fans, there was a question about that. What word is used, mobile phones communicate, for the Miami airport scene. And I remembered it and I got that one right. But well, I really like it because it obviously stuck in my mind, because I think it's like it immediately says to the viewers like, what was that? So you see that at the start of this scene and then you see it again at the very end of this scene. And so it's in the viewer's mind and they'll be thinking, right, something about that might come back, and then you forget about it and you see it again.
There's a lovely David Arnold cue the second time you hear it. It's a sort of mystery. Yeah,
yeah. As well as it being a chase and a lot of running, jumping and that, there's a really pleasing amount of gunfire, especially when they get in the embassy. Loads of machine gun fire. And
that's very golden.
And some great explosions along the way. Yes, it is, which is brilliant. It's so good to see.
Everything you're saying, I'm completely agreeing with. When they get into the embassy, and then there's that bit where he's forcing the bomb maker down the corridor, isn't it? And the windows smashing in, the shrapnel going everywhere.
Brilliant.
He's firing. Yeah. Then he goes in and scares a load of poor office workers, throws him out of a window. It might not be traditional Bond, but I think it is. Very aggressive.
He's very brutal in this embassy scene. He's very reckless. He's very...
He
is. But this is so right for this film. They're just trying to portray him as a reckless idiot, basically, who isn't, he doesn't get it at this moment in time. His ego is far bigger than the cause. It's all right, and I think it really works well in this scene. Again, it's building the character up.
Yeah,
I like just before that all starts, even with the whole stop touching your ear. All this, it's so spy, so classic.
Yeah,
I can picture Dalton doing that really well. Yeah, but no, Daniel Craig from the moment is doing well in my book.
I agree.
The fact that he's sort of controlling that other younger agent, and he's like, yeah, Bond knows exactly what he's doing here, even though he is a blunt instrument, in inverted commas.
Yeah.
Like I say, it's so well done how that he, his is a more reckless, improvised chase compared to this absolutely ridiculous guy who can do anything and jump around anywhere.
Yeah.
You've got to question M's management at this stage, though, haven't you? It's like, how bad is the subordinate agent poor. To Bond if he's such a reckless idiot?
Yeah.
Like, well, he's never
you never see him again, do you? He falls into the snake pit. Does he die? The meerkat kill him, or what happens to
him? Yeah. Komodo dragon.
Mongoose.
Is it a mongoose? Is that
it's
what
a
it
mongoose.
Is?
Mongoose and a snake, a isn't it? Mongoose can kill snakes.
I thought it was a ferret as well. Certainly not a meerkat, and I didn't know it was a mongoose.
Pretty cool, though.
Yeah, and again, yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah.
Memorable.
This guy with scars on his face, again, it's all very Bond trope, isn't it?
Yeah.
So they get in, the sort of the manages to hitch a ride, doesn't he, on the roof of that van or whatever it is, jumps into the embassy. Because this chap thinks it's a fake country, isn't it? No, like we said, John, in the quiz, Nambutu.
Yeah.
Presumably because obviously they might have been politically a bit dodgy to actually do what they do in a real country, and the fact that he kills. Anyway.
This is just me and my nerdy geography knowledge, but it's babyishly. There's a the country Vanuatu,
the island in the Pacific Islands.
Yeah. Well, obviously it sounds similar, but the flag that they give Nambutu is basically the exact same shape, just twisting some of the colours around of that.
John's knowledge of flags is famous.
Wow.
That is brilliant.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. If I was like part of the Vanuatu tourism board, I'd be raging by this, absolutely. Yeah.
We're putting that one down to purpose.
Yeah, of course. Placeholder. Angus like, no, too late, done.
It's one of his ideas here, one of their ideas.
The Bond gets into this embassy, I think it's quite like GoldenEye in the Seven Eye thing. Shooting pipes, you know, he chucks those guys down the stairs all at once, which is very Bond. He's sort of a bit harsh, though, when he goes in, he sort of knocks that head of the embassy and bangs him on the head, and I think, is this the first sign of sure I like you, Bond?
Well, exactly, yeah.
He's a bit of a hot head, isn't he? Like, he literally bounces that guy's head off a statue on his own desk.
Yeah.
Like, it's bang out of order.
It's
enjoyable to watch, but you wouldn't like to be on the receiving.
There's so many shots of CCTV cameras in this film. I don't know whether I picked that up, anyone. I know
it might be because it's because it becomes public, yeah.
So then Bond surrenders. You think he surrenders, don't you? He's on the lawn bit in the sort of outdoor bit of the embassy. And then he suddenly just...
Won't call it a lawn, I don't think.
Well, no, it's more dirt. I don't know, dirt track, isn't it? But yeah.
Where they put the bins, kind of, yeah.
And then he just... Yeah, he just decides to murder the Malacca guy and blow up things, burn all the faces, doesn't it? Bit irresponsible.
Yeah, it's pretty outrageous.
I think it's partly for a story point because he unnecessarily kills him, but I think it's a little bit of a disappointing end to such an amazing action sequence, and for someone who can do such amazing stunts, it's maybe a bit disappointing, personally speaking, that he just gets shot at point.
Not like jumping and falling to his death or something.
In fact, one of my only criticisms in terms of the action in this film, which I think is on the whole brilliant, is just that the way that villains are, the villains are offed, is a very sort of stationary. Everything's calmed down, and I know you can do that sometimes, but like again, when it comes to the brilliant airport scene, he's stationary again when he's been surrounded and stuff, and then that's done. And you know, it's quite clever the way that happens. But I just
strangled in the staircase. That's famously not a fan of strangulation
I'm not a fan of. I think strangulation is a boring cinematic thing. The way they make it more exciting in this is that he's clamoring for the gun, so it's a question of when he'll run out of breath in time. But like Steven Seagal, you know, just on Under Siege 2, just going up, either break, you know, just doing that for ages, or just breaking the neck. Or something like that. Sorry, I don't want to be too negative because I think this is.
Yeah, I mean, I.
I think I'm going to be slightly negative with this as well, in terms of that I always watch it and it's got that diehard John McClane thing of it, is in terms of like, I'll give up the gun and then I'll pull another one out and do two quick shots at the end of it.
Yeah.
If I'm being slightly critical, I really reckon that someone could have shot him before he took the second shot.
It's Bond.
It doesn't... No, but it doesn't seem like so quick. You know when Bond does these things usually, it's so ridiculous. You think, oh, that's amazing. Yeah. It doesn't come across like that to me. I think he'd just be shot dead. But that is a very ridiculous, pedantic criticism.
Yeah, I think with the end of this sequence is that, like, it's been so breathless, and then they're sort of like, they're stuck in this courtyard or whatever it, you know, whatever it is within the embassy. They've sort of written themselves into the corner, and the only way out is some sort of diversion. And yeah, it's like, oh, well, what do we do now? Well, you can just shoot him and blow something up and run for it.
I think it's from quite a babyish thing, but the fact that you've been up these amazing cranes and everything, this incredible peril, and then he's just sort of shot at point blank range. But again, I know, you know, like you say.
Well, I know you've said there are a few more examples of that, and I agree with that. But I think for now, not knowing what's coming ahead, I'm happy with how that ends. I think that's a... I think it's a pretty
it's a
decent
a twist,
end
it?
To the whole sequence. Yeah, yeah.
You think that's it.
And there's a bit of surprise about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing is, at this point, they're really setting Bond out as a mean guy in terms of when it comes to getting the job done, doesn't it? I mean, we've seen him drown a guy in a sink, shoot a fella in the head and not think twice about it, and then just execute someone in front inside an embassy.
Yeah, he does seem more of an executioner than an agent.
Well, I'm sure he kills far more people than anyone else does in this, like in this film. Like the baddies can't be anywhere near as bad as what Bond.
I think the difference.
Sorry, that's just
acknowledged. Yeah, yeah. That is acknowledged. Yeah. There's a line that M says that she says to him, "Any thug can kill. I need you to take your ego out of the equation." So I think it is a purposeful thing, purposely dislikable in this film. And actually, I know this sounds really harsh, but Craig is best when he's trying to be dislikable. In terms of that, that's when I actually think he's the
well
most
cast
effective.
For the story they're trying to tell and the person to, and that's
definitely
the reason I came to with this one. In terms of the way the sort of the decisions in the story, this is a general theme on the film. I might not agree with them all and what they do, but they are done intentionally and they're executed well. But when it comes to Skyfall and the Sam Mendes ones and Spectre, I just don't think they have a clue what they're trying to do. And none of it makes sense. Yeah. It's like a mad, congealed mess that somehow non-Bond audiences might love for some reason. You know, it passes, you know, all the holes are sort of covered and you get those famous scenes, you get the beats and stuff like that. But with this, it's like everything is there for a reason. It can be explained. It's properly done. It's properly written.
That's right.
Properly directed. Yeah. Yeah, Martin Campbell obviously knows what he's doing with everything as we go along.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
For the next scene, extremely Bond shot, first shot of some babe coming out of the water in the sunset, a ladder up to a yacht, and of course it's the Schieffer's girlfriend we later learn. Lovely David Arnold score as she's coming out of the water, well shot as we say, and then this weird poker game with like a middle-aged couple. It's all very odd, isn't it?
Absolutely,
face like thunder, both of them.
I like the fact that they're obviously like, I don't know, they're obviously people who need to be intimidated a bit by the sheep.
They don't seem it, though.
You know, I like the blood tear and the way that he explains it. I like all that. I think it's very Bond.
Yeah.
John, can you put a bit more flesh on the bones? Because
I can't put any flesh on the bones apart from the female is the actress who played the girl in You Only Live Twice who seduces Bond at the beginning, and then the one about Peking Duck, who basically,
you think we better?
Yeah, it's her.
Yeah,
which, that's incredible.
It's her. It was a big
now
thing
I
like, when it came out. All you Bond fans. It doesn't. It makes no sense why it happens or anything like that. But actually, I love that. It's a lovely little Easter egg bit of respect.
Yeah, you know, great,
wow. Lovely little cameo.
Also, what? We see this bald henchman again. It's the first we didn't mention in our henchman.
I'd forgotten episode. About him. Can you remember his name, anybody? I had to look it up. I don't think he's given a name. Krat. K-R-A-T-T. Krat.
Krat. That's horrendous.
I mean, he's pretty...
Chris Pratt's name is fused together.
He's not. I don't know. He's got quite a striking face, but that's about it. Quite a nice jacket.
Yeah, he does something good with a knife later, I think.
He's like a henchman of a henchman of a henchman of a
henchman. I assume he's shot in the corridor before Le Chiffre is killed. You'd probably hear him being shot in a corridor.
Off screen again.
Yeah,
so we get the nice tears.
This is the first introduction to the bleeding eye, isn't it? Yeah.
This chap comes in, doesn't he, Krat, and whispers something in his ear. Le Chiffre has to turn to his Sony Bravia laptop, which is signposted very well. Yeah, the news... article, quite, you know, they could have at least thought of a better name for the news. Anyway, British government agent kills unarmed prisoner. So does that, so Bond's cover is blown. I was going to mention this at the end of the film in terms of the marketing and the box office and the budget and all that, but after Die Another Day was dubbed Buy Another Day due to the massive amount of product placement, they apparently did a lot less for this film, but goodness me, there's still quite a lot, isn't there? We haven't got onto the Ford Mondeo, but yeah, the first one here is the Sony Bravia laptop.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Which is there in all its glory. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, it's not that, but isn't it? You know, it's got to it'd be a bit silly if there was no make, wouldn't it? Which is the same thing. Which
exactly.
The news.
I've no problem with product placement because everything has to have a brand, really, you know, as in... Yeah. It'd be more notable if it wasn't branded. I was watching an episode of something recently, and a guy was drinking a bottle of Stella Artois, but that, you know, where it said Stella Artois had just all been made red, so that's more noticeable for me. There has to be a brand. I think the only thing with this is that you know, both the villains and the goodies are all using the same Sony laptop, so that's the only, you know, it is quite noticeable.
Yeah.
Same brand.
I mean, Martini is a brand.
Exactly. So, product placement is a part of Bond. It always has been. It's just part of it. And I've not got a problem with Sony Vowels or whatever they call laptops. It's so of its era. I do think it's so babyish when he sends the quitting email at the end on the boat. It's like you've got this beautiful scenery in the middle of Venice.
Yeah.
I just get my Sony laptop out in the middle of the Mediterranean. Yeah. I'm not fully buying that, but yeah.
Where's the Wi-Fi?
Great point. Yeah.
Especially in
mid 2000s. There's no Wi-Fi.
Yeah, we're not quite at the Heineken stage of Bond product placement at this stage, but this article, obviously, so now Le Chiffre is onto Bond in terms of this article saying British government agent kills unarmed prisoner. Does that mean Bond's cover was blown? I mean, do people now know he's...
They might not know him by name, because they might be allowed to not release a name, but yeah, it seems like the world is aware
you
that
know my name.
A British agent is... Yeah. Which is quite significant, isn't it? World news.
Of course it's not.
So we've got less than 36 hours before Ellipsis expires. So again, we're intrigued. What is this? And then a bit of sinister, very Bond villain, or throw them overboard.
Terrible host. Just appalling manners.
They're not really a threat, again, are they? I'll say a middle-aged couple just having a game of cards.
He's just beaten him at poker and now he's going to throw him off his yacht.
Yeah.
It's just outrageous. Yeah. And, oh, mostly this scene only exists to show that Le Chiffre is actually good at cards. Because yeah. we wouldn't know that otherwise yeah. when they get to the
That's
casino.
True, yeah.
Yeah. And also yeah. that he's yeah. nasty.
Very nasty. It's good. It's good, yeah. Okay, good. Still, we're still yeah, persevering with this film. Yeah.
It's all good.
We've got the pickups on side at this point.
Yeah.
We keep checking in as we go.
There's no sign of anything yeah. going wrong at all. It's good.
We then get to London. First time we're back in Blighty, as they say. Shot a classic shot of Westminster, which Mendes would become absolutely obsessed with. Aired my complaints about that. Anyway, a lovely crisp shot of M leaving the committee room with Villiers, Tobias Menzies.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's one of those guys. Yeah. Like, he's like, what do I know him off? Isn't he? He's one of those.
He's Prince Philip.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've obviously I've not seen that.
Yeah, he's
but,
Prince Philip now. Yeah,
The Crown, isn't it?
Did he used to be in Casualty?
Yes, he did, Harry. Yeah, did we used to watch him?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
He must have been quite young then.
We did. Yeah, yeah. That's where I first recognised him from. But he's classed as Prince Philip in The Crown.
He was a fairly.
He
was in Game of Thrones, but he wasn't a massive
so many of those
character.
Characters, though, aren't there?
You've got to try and remember, but because I knew the actor. I remembered him. I think for some reason I always used to get him mixed up with, and it might this guy might also be in Quantum of Solace. For some reason, and I don't think it looked like he reminded me of the guy, or I got mixed up between him and the guy who's young Sherlock.
Oh yeah, Holmes. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
Is he in Quantum
I don't
of Solace?
Know, Matt.
I'm sure they were both in the same thing.
I don't think Villiers appears again, though, does he?
Why
in,
do, but anyway.
In the Bond films?
Oh no. No, I don't think he does.
I know, he's like a sort of lapdog, isn't he, for M.
Strange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Villiers, yeah. The name Villiers is a reference to James Villiers, I think, who played Bill Tanner in Fury's Only. And apparently there's someone called Amherst Villiers in the novel. He was also in Outlander. I've only seen the film. But apparently he got a Golden Globe.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, he was in Rome and The Night Manager. Both very crisp.
Yep. He plays a sarcastic doctor in Catastrophe. He's only in like 3 episodes, but he comes in and he's just really withering to Sharon Horgan, which is very enjoyable. Yeah, he's a good actor. I bet he read for Bond as well. You know, if you're saying that like 200 people went on tape for it, I bet nearly every male actor, British actor who's in this and is of the right sort of age profile, probably read for Bond.
We don't like his Bond, but we'll give you this pathetic role as M's
little gopher,
But he's quite right.
You'll mainly be on the phone.
Not what he could do.
Perfect.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's cut to it. What an absolute foul mouth, potty mouth M we get here. It's disgusting. Yeah.
She is in a bit of a grump, isn't she?
Arse covering prigs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So go on.
Go on, Harry. No.
I was just going to say, aside from that, and I know we know that this is his first mission as Bond. We know all that, but it is slightly confusing. This is where you know the lines all become a bit blurry, because here's where she says, you know, I give him his 00 status, and you know he celebrates by blowing up an embassy. I know that this is his first mission, and this is his first M that he you know develops a relationship with. But it is confusing that it's the same M from all the. However much you like it, and I know she's a brilliant M, it's all pretty confusing, and it gets even more confusing when he uses his car from Goldfinger in Skyfall. So, but like you've said, in this film, they did kind of know what they were doing, but by the time they got to Skyfall, like I've said with this, they've had the affair. By the time it's getting to Skyfall, he's trying to rescue the marriage and trying to suck up and, you know, be the perfect husband again and making a mess of it. But here, it's just a little bit confusing. I don't know. I still don't know the answer to my own question, but should they have cut clean and got a new M? I don't know. I know you've said that as we go ahead, they should keep Ralph Fiennes, but I don't know.
I do agree, Harry. It's a funny one. I mean, one of the reasons why I think they should keep Ralph Fiennes is that I don't think they should do a reboot. I think they should just carry on all the others were.
Yeah.
And you know, it doesn't need to. Doesn't need to be making going back to the beginning. Just carry on. It does great. It is weird that she starts. But what I noticed specifically this time round when watching it was how different personality she is from the Pierce Brosnan era. It is like she's a different character.
True, that
in
is
terms
true, yeah.
of it must be deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
But she's she
when I think of Judi Dench in the Brosnan era, I really think of this woman who's trying to fight against a lot of chauvinism, who's quite polite actually at times and a bit cautious. Like, you know, I think of Admiral Roebuck and that kind of thing, and he's telling her, you don't have the balls for this, M, and she gives it back, but she's more placid in the way that she is.
Yes, she is. She's a bit smaller.
She's quite dislikable. I actually find her quite crabby and dislikable, and I don't warm to her in this film at all. I'm sorry.
No, I agree. But I think you're right to point out that it must have been a conscious decision to slightly separate her, the two incarnations of M, perhaps.
I agree with what you guys are saying there. It's what it came across to me is that she was like, it was almost like it was an 80s action movie and Bond was a rogue cop who got results. And very much the cantankerous police captain who has to chew him out over and over again.
Yeah.
I quite like that dynamic in term from a general film perspective. You know, I enjoy the angry captain shtick. It's good. But whether it works in the... It's confusing because Judi Dench is a holdover from the last era of Bond. And then, as you say, she's sort of playing a completely different version of M in this one. So it is a little bit confusing because I'm right in thinking she's the only holdover from the Brosnan era, isn't she?
Yeah, actor
and Purvis and Wade.
David Arnold. I think they maybe didn't want to go, like, they wanted it a reboot. They wanted, you know, things stripped away and everything, but M has to be there. And I think because Judi Dench was always praised as M and everything, and always went down well, quite rightly so, I would say. They thought, right, well, maybe this links it to some of the others a little bit, so at least, because, like, for me, it's almost crucial that she's there to remind me that this is still official Bond film.
That's a good point.
If you know what I mean? And also David Arnold's score. Because otherwise, I don't know, if it was a new M and everything, then you're developing a sort of... It just helps the audience to know, even though I agree that she is a bit different. I do agree about that. But it just helps the audience link that relationship a bit sooner, and so they know who she is and they don't need an explanation of her and her background.
Mm.
Well, obviously, I presume M's a man.
Yeah.
So they want... Again, trying to be progressive, they might have thought, yeah, we don't want to go back to another man so soon.
That's what I think.
Yeah. Judi Dench is a big name. Everybody likes her, like you say, Math. She's a great actress. Even though I completely disagree with this decision to have the same M, because it just doesn't work if you're having a reboot. Her relationship with Daniel Craig's Bond is one of the best things in their three and a bit films together. It's a good thing for the wrong reasons, if I could say that. But she's not the same. Yeah. Even by Skyfall, she's much more realistic and reasonable, perhaps. And as in the way she deals with Bond. In this, she's perhaps, like you say, there's no way that Admiral Roebuck and those people would stand up so profusely to someone who spoke like this and was just so blinkered and horrible and in charge like that. But again, it's for the character, isn't it? It's to make... They needed someone, like, they're trying to go back to the Fleming, the original Bernard Lee, who's a complete... Wouldn't want to meet him, you know, goodness me, be told off by him in his office. So I think they wanted to go back to that, obviously. Being the character of Bond, he's like this blunt instrument. They need someone who's really severe to try and get him in shape. I mean, we'll go on to it later, but the dialogue is too on the nose for me. The whole, why would M be so obsessed with analysing Bond's character? It just doesn't... It only works for the story it's trying to set. It doesn't... It wouldn't happen in real life, would it? I mean, really. Good night, lads.
No, I agree with that. I completely agree. And I think that's how I feel about it. I think if they were... I agree that Matthew, you're right, it's a comforting face in a brave new world, kind of. But this is all just my theory. I think what Tom said, that if they were to recast, it's unlikely they'd recast another woman. So they would recast a man, and that would be not seen as progressive.
Hi, this is Anthony Stark. I played Truman Lodge in License to Kill, and you're listening to Really 007.
We come to a problematic scene. No, it isn't really, no. Not in that sense, but it is a little bit un-Bond, some might say. We get Bond breaking into M's apartment. So, I mean, it becomes a habit in the Craig era. Let's just say that from the outset. To start off, though, we get a lovely little David Arnold score. I've written down here a bit like the World Is Not Enough, with a similar scene, actually, of course, when he meets M. But before he gets there, this is what I'm on about. He's on the computer, isn't he? And he's doing some crisp detective work, which I thought was quite Bond.
Is he topless?
Yeah. Why was he?
Yeah.
Yeah, was he tough?
Yeah.
And why was he doing the detective work in her apartment? Was it because he needed her computer?
Yeah.
He's not topless.
Oh, no, he's not topless.
That's later, Harry.
Whilst that is quite Bond, he wasn't topless in this one.
No. Is that with...
he's not flushed the toilet. It's disgraceful. Yeah,
it is. It is.
He's done a top decker in M's bathroom.
Left a plumber's bonus.
I can see why you guys don't think this is very Bond. It's Bango.
It's gritty, though. It's gritty.
Yeah. A lot of that we've read between the lines. Yeah. Why is he in the apartment, first of all, if anyone can... explained. I'm thick, so.
So my interpretation is that she only her has the access levels of the people good she's job. Checking for. So that's why he's gone into it with it.
You know, I'm one of the ones who I really don't like the fact he's broken into M's apartment, and you know, I've made that clear to you guys before. But yeah, but why do you think they chose to do this rather than breaking into her office? Because I thought. I would have been happier, personally, with him breaking, you know, because I think it's still showing his sort of arrogance. I get that. And, you know, like, I'm going to get to the bottom of it, even if, you know, she's not going to tell me. I want to find out what's going on here. I would have much preferred it, if he'd have broken into, you know, gone into the computer in her office or something like that.
Is it some kind of way of showing that he's perhaps got further than any other agent, closer than any other agent to her? He's managed to sort of get behind...
And find out where she lives, which is quite impressive.
Yeah.
And there'd be less security at her house, wouldn't there, than at MI6?
And, yeah.
Yeah, but you're breaking into your boss's house.
I mean, I think one thing I find with this film is that I think you see glimpses of James Bond's potential as an agent throughout it. You can tell that he's actually really good at the detective work, i.e. the scene, but it does have this edge, this dislikable edge throughout it. It's like, it's a rough edge. And to me, I just interpret it as another way of how he's supposed to grow into this more rounded character by the end. And I do actually think this film does that well.
Yeah.
But I think that it's actually... To me, the issue is that he breaks into M's apartment in Skyfall. I think that's the bigger issue for me, because I can... Whilst I don't like him breaking into the apartment here, I can kind of see where they're going with it. But the fact...
He's Dirty Harry, isn't he? Like, he's basically a renegade cop within the MI6 infrastructure, isn't he? He's like... He doesn't play by the rules. Yeah. That's
he's not respectable. He's not respectful at this stage of his career.
He's not afraid to break the traffic laws.
Exactly,
he will go 70 miles an hour.
Absolutely, yeah.
70 miles an hour, tops. I like the detective work. He finds out that the message, Ellipsis, was sent from the Ocean Club in Bahamas. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice little A to B, isn't it, detective work?
Yeah.
And then M comes in with the shopping and various things. Does anyone want to do an impression? Can you remember a first line when she comes in?
I know when he says, I didn't realise that M stood for...
Oh, no.
Oh, she sounds...
I don't understand that joke, but no.
It's a good line. It's funny, I think. I think it's a really good joke.
What does it mean? What does it mean?
So he goes, I think... I always thought M was a randomly assigned letter, doesn't he? And then he's about to say what her name actually is, and she basically says if he reveals that, she'll shoot him.
I enjoyed it. It is good, but presumably it's reveal that to the audience who are watching, because she now knows that... He knows and she knows what it is, so...
Yeah.
Sorry,
he's managed.
Yeah.
It's back to the detective thing. He's managed to figure out what her real name is, and he shouldn't know that.
And then there's obviously a continuity error, because then in, I think it's Spectre, there's a scene, but basically it's revealed that her name's Olivia Mansfield.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So he obviously just.
But unless he's saying that M is from Mansfield,
possibly. Yeah, possibly. Fair enough.
Yeah,
so it's fine.
Yeah, the other continuity thing though is that.
It's unlikely that Spectre would have continuity errors.
Yeah, but and also in Skyfall, he's an old dog that, you know, doesn't really know how to use technology, and he's behind the times. He's behind Q. He doesn't know how to, you know, hack and things like that. Oh yes, he does. He's an expert. He's hacked into the boss's laptop.
Yeah, but Harry,
that is a good point. Actually, yeah, but he's like a dinosaur by Spectre.
Yeah, yeah. He's lost knowledge by Skyfall.
But you've got to remember, lads, that this is the series that is delaying its production because the product placement is 2 years out of date. So come on. Yeah.
Dear me, reshoot behind the wrong kind of iPhone.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, well, I'd written down. She's swearing obviously again. You've got a bloody cheek. Something like that. It's a bit worse swearing? Than that. Breaking into
your ass.
The scene is a little bit like the one in Goldeneye, the first one where Pierce Brosnan meets M, and it's like bollocking, 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 respect, 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 and then it ends on a nice kind of note.
Yeah.
So it is a good scene.
Yeah, I agree.
In terms of the drama and building up the relationship, she's not as caring as she is with Brosnan, as we've said before. I don't think she's quite there yet. Perhaps only in Skyfall does she get to that level of.
This is where we get, you know, she says that he's a blunt instrument and talks about his arrogance and stuff.
I knew it was too early to promote you for the trailer.
Kind of, you know, what John was saying. Sorry, I just can't think of it. It's what Gareth was saying about if you've got a dog, someone else's bones. Sorry.
Give me a dog a bone.
It's from the UK office, that.
Yeah.
For our American viewers.
Not Roy Walker, Matt.
Say what you see, Gareth.
Yeah.
Right.
But that leads it neatly into the say what you see. Like the newspaper is tossed into the exact position of the headline beautifully, isn't it? Like, I can't, what is it like? MI6, someone killed, or I can't remember.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, about the.
Yeah, what he's done.
What he's done in Madagascar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Other things I've written down that she calls him: arrogant, self-aware, egotistical, obviously.
Thug.
Yeah, thug. You got that. Thug life.
Yeah, R&B thug.
Like I said, I think previously, it just hammers it home a little bit too much for me that they're trying to tell you what his character is. Because it's good for the plot, isn't it? And it's good for the character progression as we go on, character development. But still, these bastards want your head.
Yes.
who are the bastards? I can't. It's so long since I've seen it. I'm so sorry.
I imagine it's the people in the embassy, isn't it? They're not very happy.
Yeah, yeah.
They want him dead.
Who are the press?
Yeah.
And MI6 as well. They won't be very happy. That's why he's had to. Right. That's why he's had to break into the apartment, isn't it? Oh, we're all geniuses here. He can't go to the MI6 building because they're all furious with him.
Right.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And he'll probably be arrested as soon as he steps foot in there. So he's got to break into M's apartment.
So insightful.
It's quite a obviously a famous line. The whole "any thug can kill." I want you to take your ego out of the equation and judge the situation dispassionately. I think that's, in a nutshell, wrapped up really well by it. As in, I think that all work. This is all working at the moment for me. In terms of, he is blunt, he's reckless, careless, and that point is any thug can kill. Although, you know, only have to kill two. Any thug can kill.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's right. You know, he's got to take his ego out of the equation. He does need to develop. He does need to be much more moulded. I think it's working at the moment, definitely, in this stage of the film.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
Don't ever break into my house again.
Yeah.
But he does. And then he leaves the laptop slightly open.
Yes.
Is that so that she can make sure she can track him, is it?
Is it for product placement?
Yeah, it could be, I don't know.
Yeah, and he turns it towards the camera, doesn't he? Like Sony base. No, I'm joking. Yeah. And then
that's
looks at the camera.
I interpret as yes. Because I think he sees that this is something about what's going down the ellipsis, and he wants her to know what happens. And obviously, as we go later on,
it's kind of it's like the equivalent of Kevin McAllister attaching the notes to the brick, isn't it? In Home Alone 2.
And he kind of becomes Kevin
McAllister. He does. Yeah, he does. Yeah, he goes there. Yeah.
All these clues you were getting.
Yeah, Easter eggs.
First one, yeah. Dear, dear.
Then it goes beautifully into the next scene.
Yes. Nassau.
Yeah.
Home of Sean Connery.
The music's gorgeous.
Yeah.
I noticed our friend Stephen Carter shared this little clip of, you know, it going into the scene and the beautiful music.
Yeah. Aspirational Bond.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crisp clothes. Yeah. With, coming on a small plane.
Hints at the Bond theme, I think, I've got written down.
Yeah.
Big Bond theme. Steps out of the plane in a suit.
Good.
Yeah.
Quite tight.
Oh, well, they're all tight.
Oh, yeah.
To show show the body, innit?
You should wear tighter trousers.
I like your little beard.
I think I do agree it's a very classic and great scene setting. I don't want this a pointless thing to be negative about, but I actually think his wardrobe isn't very good in this film. I think is a bit of a misstep from Lindy Hemming, quite a rare misstep. I don't think he even looks 2006, he looks quite 90s at some points. And he does look a bit like a Russian thug, kind of, like in some really unusual. When you go to that museum later and some of the sunglasses, I think it looks quite dated, his outfit. It's not, there aren't many classic outfits that he wears. So it's just a slight misstep from Lindy Hemming, I'd say, on that.
I think that's a really interesting point, that, Harry. I think we talked about in the Skyfall episode that Craig usually looked better in, like, when he was wearing the coat and the scarf, the hunting gear, as opposed to wearing
the barber jacket.
Yeah.
The barber jacket.
Product placement.
Yeah.
I would say in this film it's the opposite, actually. I would say I agree with you, Harry. I don't think he looks very good with his shirt and stuff, with his, like, short-sleeve shirts and his sunglasses and stuff. But, spoiler alert, I think he looks brilliant in a suit in this film.
Yes, apart from the suit. I didn't have the suit in mind saying that. It's more, he looks, just when he's arriving at the Ocean Club and potting around, he looks more like an ultra to me.
Totally agree.
Like a Russian ultra. He looks like one of the villains that Bond would be dispatching, kind of, that kind of.
Because he's still a thug, Harry, he's not got
he's not taken the ego out of the equation yet.
The script. I'm obsessed with his sort of such casual outfit, obviously when he's recuperating later on.
Gorgeous.
Anyway, I'll delve more into that later because the room makes me laugh.
It's a bit like GoldenEye, how he spots the yachts then.
Yeah.
I don't notice, that was quite crisp.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then we get the Mondeo. Gorgeous Mondeo man.
Yeah,
it's who the Labour were trying to attract as voters, wasn't it? Mondeo man in the 90s. Again, back to the 90s, isn't it?
I always thought the Bond theme over this bit was beautiful. And then all of a sudden Bond comes roaring into the frame in my dad's car.
Is this how he earns the theme?
How much did Ford pay for that? Fortune. Can we have the Bond theme played over him driving one of our bog standard saloons?
Michael G. Wilson, like, it's not really a Bond car, so you're going to have to pay a little bit more money.
I mean, it's unforgivable. I can't disagree with that. But one thing it has going for it is it's better than him driving that hideous khaki-coloured four car in Quantum of Solace. It's an upgrade from that one, definitely. you'll see that.
You will see that.
I just remember watching it with my dad, and he goes, "That's my car."
And the rest of the dads in the cinema. Yeah,
it's absolutely brilliant.
All the dads start looking at each
exact
other.
Model, but it's not an exact model, but he had a silver Mondeo for sure.
Did he sort of coast on that for a bit? Like, I drive James Bond's car.
To be honest, though,
Aston Martin.
I things like this and product placement, they can be more of a criticism for me, but they're not something I don't like. They're not something that offends me at all. I can perfectly put up with them.
It's just something that, you know, people pick up on.
Yeah, they'll notice. Yes.
These sort of tennis babes checking Bond out as he arrives. No reaction. I've written from Bond.
No.
Just sort of
mouth closed, presumably.
More shots of cameras, loads in this film, CCTV for some reason. But for this it's specific because it's going to play a part in a second. because he's trying to get through, isn't he, to find out the... It's quite complicated, but it's really good detective work from Bond to sort of get the timing of that satellite shot to twin it with the photography of the Demetrios chap.
Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah.
And it's all done in as well in a way that the audience can follow this. That it's very really clearly shot, directed, and the story's told really nicely. Yeah,
yeah.
And there's like these two guys, the golfer guys, are they? One of them looks like—is he meant to look like Goldfinger?
I didn't see that.
He's wearing the same clothes that Goldfinger wore.
Yeah, like a Pringle top or something.
Yeah, and Bond's... That is very Bond, though, like how he sort of just pretends and he's happy to pretend to be a valet just so he can crash the... It all links in nicely, crashing the Range Rover to distract sort of people, and then they rush out, don't they?
Yeah.
Very close.
Yeah, it is.
I like it. You're not so sure, John? I can...
It's one of the bit that grates on me, that.
Oh.
Do you think he's a bit...
trying to big this film up.
Yeah.
I get what he's doing. I just think it's not very secret agent. For a place that is, like, you know, full of CCTV cameras, it's going to be picked up very quickly that a guy's taken a car key off someone and then viciously driven a Range Rover around back into somebody else's car. It's going to be picked up straight away. I just don't think it's very subtle, to be honest.
But
this
is what he's supposed to be learning, isn't it? He, you know,
yes.
And again, it just makes it... this is what confused me a little bit. It just seems that you become a 00 agent and then you learn how to become a 00 agent. Surely this is stuff that he should have perfected before he was appointed. Being slick, being subtle. And I think, you know, that would have been interesting, maybe, that once he becomes a 00 agent, he learns how to channel his feelings. But it seems to be a lot about he becomes a 00 agent and then learns how to be a 00 agent, kind of.
Yes, it does.
Again, we've got to come back to M's management of the situation to see the right man for the job at this stage.
And HR.
The manager usually gets the sack, don't they?
Exactly.
Yeah. M's boss is like, now have you trained him properly? Like, well, it's...
yeah.
He'll learn the ropes.
Yeah. He shot a dude in the head and had a good kiss offline. That's enough, isn't it?
Let him through. He's in that crisp surveillance room, like I've said, matching the text with the time on the CCTV images. And then we get the introduction of, well, not only the Demetrios couple, but the Aston Martin. I know John's not... another scene John isn't keen on, that Bond wins it in a bet, but...
When we get on
good
to
detective
that,
work, though.
When we get on to that, I'll talk about it.
Yeah. I know. I'm just
And I will talk.
Gearing the lessons.
But we are introduced to Demetrios and his wife.
Yes.
I have nothing but praise in all sorts of ways for different ways for both of them. Yeah. Because I really like... I think he's a really Bond character. Real, not a main villain, like a secondary, you know, a
villain.
Really Bond. Yeah. And then obviously Solange Demetrios. I mean,
what do you like about
her? I mean, she's a stunning lady.
And it's stunning acting, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
But anyway, all we've seen is a shot of her.
Yeah, but the audience knows from that.
The audience,
that shot, right?
They're drawn to her. But they're also then drawn to another lady, a receptionist, who I'm sure you all thought instantly, oh yeah, I know who she is. She's the girl from What a Girl Wants.
The main character?
Amanda Bynes' brilliant comedy film, yeah? No, she's like the baddie, the villain girl in that.
Ah.
What a hot streak then. That must have come out around the same time as this.
Well, I think she was a teenager in that, so it's a few years before. But yeah, but a bit of flirting for Bond.
Yes, yeah.
I like it. Yeah, and Bond interacting with a receptionist is very Bond.
It's very Roger Moore.
It does make me think, and I think we've had a laugh about this in all the Bond films. Wouldn't it be odd if Bond was greeted with like a male sort of overweight receptionist once in a while? Like, it was just all very matter of fact. And
well, of course, in the previous Bond film, in Die Another Day, in Hong Kong, I think it is, he's greeted by, you know, when he comes in, he's soaking wet with his beard.
Oh, yeah.
I have a credit card, sir. I think I remember that guy.
Oh, yeah.
Great, I prefer this receptionist.
Yeah.
As we've said, the first 40 minutes of that movie are pretty good.
Yeah.
Yes, they are. Strong.
And Die Another Day. And What a Girl Wants. All of that's great. But it's very Bond that he gets the information, isn't it? He manages to get the information about who the Aston Martin is belonging to. Yeah. That's all he needs to know.
I love it.
Into another very Bond... Well, it's actually the first bit of the first shot is so iconic, but no, that's not what the main iconic shot, the scene is remembered for. It's not the beautiful woman riding the pony, it's Daniel Craig.
It's not a pony, is it?
It's not a donkey ride at Blackpool.
It was filmed in Blackpool.
Yeah.
No, you're right.
It's an iconic shot of her.
Yeah, the green bikini and gorgeous Arnold music.
Yeah.
And then crisp. Obviously...
checking
sadly,
each other out.
He emerges from the sea.
Very much like Angela Andrus.
It's a funny one, isn't it? It's a funny one because...
like Jinx.
Well, I was just going to say that. It's like every Bond has a scene where they're half naked. I mean, you think of like GoldenEye, the introduction with Pierce Brosnan. You think of the scene when they're in the hotel and he's just got out the pool and he has the swooshing hair and stuff. And you know, he looks tremendous, let's be honest. And then, so then, I don't have a problem with it being a scene like this with Daniel Craig. What I do have a bit of a problem is how overproduced it is in terms of like the big music on the background. And it does come across like the Jinx scene. I think it does. I think it's like a male version of the Jinx scene, personally.
Yeah.
And that Jinx scene was quite praised, wasn't it? Not praised at the time, but well noticed because it was
an homage.
It feels a very conscious sort of shot. And I remember around the time, a lot of the conversation was, we're rebadging Bond. Because he was sort of getting, I don't know if this came out of the Bourne thing or not, but I remember, it might have even been Matt Damon who said, you know, that the characters are different because Bond is a misogynist and all this sort of discourse was around the film. And it feels like a very noticeable and deliberate shot to say, well, look, we can't be misogynistic anymore because we're we're objectifying Bond as well.
Yeah.
Daniel Craig will be up
two
for
wrongs
it
make a right.
Yeah, because he's clearly worked himself to death in the gym to get into shape for this role. Set time is 6 minutes. 6 minutes. Check. So yeah, it does feel like, oh no, this isn't your dad's Bond anymore. We're everyone gets objectified.
Yeah,
for everyone.
Yeah.
I know there's something in the argument that, well, people like Navy SEALs and SAS soldiers, they must have to be pretty ripped, mustn't they, and all that.
Pretty trim.
But a spy is slightly different, isn't he? Because he's meant to blend in a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, these are. It doesn't mean that he shouldn't look like that. It's just,
no.
I think it's just the fact it's so deliberate.
Yeah.
That, you know.
Yeah,
they're
for
like,
this shot.
This is the shot, you know. We're making an iconic shot here.
Yeah. And I do remember at the time it was talked about a lot in and around the film, that's the scene where Daniel Craig gets out of the sea, and you know, a lot of female colleagues would talk about it, gushing, you know, absolutely, really sort of infatuated. But like, in like, and there was sort of really a lot of female fans, you know, sort of won over by this, and I do wonder if they felt after the sort of lukewarm reception of his announcement as Bond, whether they had to do some kind of winning over on that front.
Look, he's sexy.
Yeah. I mean, exactly.
Just to emphasise that, I had a girlfriend at the time, and she had this picture of Daniel Craig on her bedroom wall.
You see?
And we watched that film. And we split up quite soon after.
Was your body not up to scratch? Yeah,
absolutely not, no.
Just to clarify, John, it's your body I would want as a spy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. As a spy.
What do you think he was doing? Was he just, I don't know, just dunking himself in the shallow end? It was a bit. Was he up and swim? Like, not bothered about the mission. I'll just have a quick swim.
Yeah, not sure. Well, and he's not afraid of getting noticed as well. He's quite happy to be noticed.
No.
Yeah. That's
like
good in a way because he's
downtime.
Trying to. Yeah. Yeah. He's trying to get her attention though, in a way. And is he trying to get info from her? So
they both see him, don't they? They both clock him.
Yeah, they both see him. Yeah.
And they're both like, cool.
Yeah. You know what?
Solanger, played by Caterina Marino, who came fifth in the 1997 Miss Italy contest.
Well,
the only other thing, I've seen her in is the short-lived Zen with Rufus Sewell, which was like a TV series set in Rome, filmed in Italy. All the actors, apart from him, were Italian, but all in English. Everyone spoke English.
No, so it's interesting.
You know, where you have to sort of forget that bit.
Yeah,
that was good though. All right, so we're back. We're back in Em's bedroom.
Yeah,
And we're the first and only sight of a husband, as far.
What's his deal? Partner. I'd love a whole film about Em's husband.
Well, yeah. We learn in Skyfall that he was a great lover of poetry and
he's dying.
And Tennyson in particular.
Yeah.
And that he's dead. Yeah. Sorry, yeah, that's the most important.
Yeah.
Don't forget the poetry.
Yeah. If sort of Disney did get the rights to Bond, you'd have a sort of spin-off series on him, wouldn't you?
I would watch it. I've got to be honest.
Yeah, I would. 100%. Legend.
The lovely kept man.
Again, but the stereotypes flipping them over. Yeah. So she's on the phone to Villiers on, is it this amazing sort of machinery next to her bed? And that's when she finds out Bond is in the Bahamas. I mean, maybe she knew because he'd left the laptop open. That slimy bugger. Again, swearing. it's a soft swear word, isn't it?
Plenty of them.
And I've put, is she referring to Bond or Demetrius? Now, Harry. This is it.
Now he's topless.
He is.
Yeah. Again, you know, this is in quite short succession. Sorry, quick succession. I've no massive problem with it. It just feels like they're trying to sell him to us quite a lot and sell this idea that he's physically big. And it's quite it's quite noticeable, I thought. It's forgivable at this stage,
It's quite crisp though what he's doing in terms of his
completely
known associates.
Yeah.
Like is it someone called Vannevar Bell? And then eventually we get onto Le Chiffre. And she really pronounces like my dad would do, his best French accent. So kudos to M there for that.
He's using her login, isn't he?
Oh, yes.
At one point, isn't he using her login details? Is that how she's able to see everything that he's doing on the screen? Yeah. And it's just more exasperation from M, isn't it? It's like, oh, he's such a cheeky little...
Right,
scamp. He's such a scamp. Yeah, exactly.
Because I know things.
Yeah. But on the topless note, sorry, I was watching Jack Reacher the other night. And there's a top where him and Rosamund Pike are, you know, but more Bond alumni, but where they're sharing a talking scene and he's just got out of the shower and for some reason he's topless and it's really, really distracting and noticeable. but she says to him, you know, like something like, you know, for goodness sake, put a top on. It's addressed. And he does have a logical reason because he only has one set of clothes in that film.
And it's Tom Cruise.
Yeah, Harry, it's a good action film. Yeah.
Harry, would you just be able to share a few more of your thoughts on Daniel Craig being topless in films?
Well, I'm sure he'll present more opportunities.
Really topless.
Part 3, Bond hits a casino even before he gets to Casino Royale, manages to get Solange killed, gets a microchip bugged in his arm, and then we go off on various tangents, which I'm sure you'll love.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.